Well, the best illustration I can use is during my 14 years, I came into Congress in 1995, and I came in with a Republican landslide in the House of Representatives. For the first time in 40 years, Republicans took control of the House. Speaker Gingrich became Speaker. It's the first time we had a Republican Speaker in 40 years. President Clinton was in the White House. Did the two very strongly willed people, Speaker Gingrich and President Clinton, agree on much? Well, the answer is what they agreed on is that government has a role to play in solving big issues. And that meant that during that period of time, when President Clinton was in the White House and Speaker Gingrich was the head of the House of Representatives, we passed three balanced budgets. Had not been done before. We passed welfare reform after President Clinton vetoed it twice. We finally passed a bill. That's the definition of bipartisanship. Last year, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Bill, which was put together by a very liberal president, President Johnson, and a fella right here from Illinois, Senator Everett Dirksen, who was a conservative Republican from central Illinois. He worked with President Johnson to pass the Civil Rights Bill. So our country has had a rich history of bipartisanship. And so the way I define it is when people go to Washington, work together, move the country forward, solve big problems. That is not happening today.
Where, when you look at government right now, where are some areas that you're actually seeing bipartisanship in government?
Well, I think if you look at what the House of Representatives Transportation Committee did last week, they did pass a transportation bill, and it's a bipartisan bill. Unfortunately, there's no money for it, so I don't know how far it will really go. But the fact is, the Transportation Committee in the House has always had a very strong reputation for bipartisanship. I served on that committee for 6 years while I was in the House, and we passed 2 6-year bills with all 75 members voting for it. So the work that the Transportation Committee did last week, I think, is a good indication that there is some bipartisanship going on in the House of Representatives. And there are certainly other examples that I can think of, but unfortunately, the kind of bipartisanship between the White House, where we have a Democratic president, and the Congress, which is controlled by Republicans, has been on the wane over the last 5 or 6 years.
I wanted to ask you your thoughts on delving in a little bit into the reasons, again, for lack of bipartisanship. And some of it certainly looks to be that there's been some gerrymandering of congressional districts. Here in the state of Illinois, Democrats controlled that process the last time around. Drew maps very favorable to Democrats, not too many competitive seats in Congress and in the state house. Similar things have happened in other states on the opposite side. North Carolina seems to have done the same thing for Republicans. Do you think that's a big factor in what we're seeing, where candidates are not particularly worried about being reelected in the general election? If anything, they're worried about a primary challenge.
I think that what you have in Washington today are 40 members in the House of Representatives, 40 congressmen in the House of Representatives who call themselves Tea Party members, not really Republican members, but Tea Party members who don't believe in government, vote no on everything, are not afraid to shut the government down. In the Senate, you have about maybe 5 to 10 senators who call themselves Tea Party members, don't call themselves Republican, disparage their own leadership, trash their own leadership. And this is what has caused the standstill. This is what's caused the stagnation. This is what has caused the inability of America to move forward on immigration reform, infrastructure reform, tax reform, and any number of other big issues. And I think eventually, if Republicans in the House don't get their act together, and it looks like they're starting to do that now with the advent of Paul Ryan becoming the new speaker, there's going to be dues to pay on this on Election Day. The American people want Congress to solve big problems. They want the economy better. They want a balanced budget. They want tax reform. They want their potholes filled, and they see none of that happening right now. And it's largely due to this crowd that calls themselves the Tea Party members who simply do not want to make progress for America.
Let's delve into transportation a little bit more, certainly an area that you're quite familiar with in your time in the House and your time in the cabinet. How do we fix the transportation situation in the United States right now? Because the motor fuels tax, which has funded transportation projects for so long, revenue from that continues to decline. There certainly doesn't seem to be much will to raise that motor fuels tax at this point. What's the answer on the transportation side?
Two crises in America today. Number one, we do not have a long-term transportation bill. We're operating on short-term, kick the ball down the field kind of transportation program. It gives no certainty, no long-range planning, no vision to contractors, to engineers, to architects, to governors who need to plan for the long term. And as I've said, America's one big pothole. We've had these brutal winters all across America, and we haven't fixed up our roads and bridges. Today, there are hundreds of bridges that are structurally deficient. Our roads are falling apart, and we need a long-term six-year bill that America can then say, we have long-range planning. We know what the future holds. We know where the money's going to come from. And the other crisis is the fact that we don't have the money. The Highway Trust Fund is broke. We don't have the resources, and others have called for increasing the gas tax, which has not been raised in 20 years. 1993 was the last time the gas tax was raised. And you can't think of anything that hasn't gone up in 20 years. A dozen eggs, a gallon of milk, an automobile, whatever. The gas tax would provide the big pot of money, raise the gas tax 10 cents a gallon, index it to the cost of living so that each year it goes up and Congress doesn't have to pass an increase. Then we get back in the ball game.
Speaking of Paul Ryan, and looks like at this point that he will accept that Speaker of the House role. Is that one of the more difficult jobs in politics right now, Speaker of the House?
Well, I think there are a lot of difficult jobs in politics, but certainly being Speaker of the House and having to corral 218 votes to pass any piece of legislation in the House is a very difficult job. I think Paul has made it clear to people that he's willing to run for the job, and there will be an election Thursday of this week when the House convenes, and it's likely that Paul will be elected. He's from Wisconsin, former vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party with Governor Romney, and certainly a seasoned, knowledgeable, new generation member of Congress who wants to make things happen. I think that's the thing that people should take heart at. If Paul becomes Speaker, I think he'll be somebody who will want to make things happen, who will want to make progress, who will want to do things in a way that reflects that America's got to move forward.
And the Republican field for the presidential nomination, still certainly a very large field. I know your son Darren is a supporter of Marco Rubio,
right,
for that nomination. Have you made an endorsement? Do you have any favorites in that field?
Well, I've contributed to Jeb Bush's campaign. I like Jeb Bush very much. I think he was a very strong governor for Florida. He implemented education reform, immigration reform. I think he's a solid, solid Republican. I think he's a conservative, which is attractive to some people. And I hope he gets the nomination. I don't believe that Donald Trump could ever win the White House because he's alienated so many people in America, including Hispanics and African Americans and women, that I don't think he could put together the coalition of people. And frankly, I don't think he'd be good for America. John Kasich, I served with in the House of Representatives. I think he's a strong candidate, and I frankly don't know Senator Rubio, but obviously Darren, my son Darren, who was just elected in a special election in the 18th district, feels strongly that Senator Rubio would be a good president, and so we have a good field. I think what we need to do is see how the Iowa caucuses play out, and then New Hampshire, and I think the person that has got a good ground game in these early primaries, in the early caucus states, will do well. And I hope Jeb Bush prevails, because I think he would be a very strong candidate for the Republican Party.